Indeed, as some observed during the debates over the Great Society, the roots of the phrase stretched back to Dewey himself. The phrase appears over and over in Dewey's 1927 The Public and Its Problems. Ultimate credit, however, should properly go to the co-founder of Fabian Socialism, Graham Wallas, who in 1914 published The Great Society, a book familiar to the two Johnson aides who claimed credit for coining Johnson's The Great Society. One of those aides was Richard Goodwin, a golden boy of the Kennedy administration. He graduated first in his class at Harvard Law, who came to JFK's attention for his work as a congressional investigator probing the quiz show scandals of the 1950s. LBJ inherited Goodwin as a speechwriter. In the summer of 1965, Goodwin offered what the New York Times called the most sophisticated and revealing commentary to date on the question, what is the Great Society? His answer lay in the need for the state to give meaning to individuals and make the world a more enjoyable and, above all, enriching place to live in. The Great Society, Goodwin explained, is concerned not with the quantity of our goods, but the quality of our lives. Though he didn't say so directly, it was clear that the Great Society would offer the opposite of the hate that killed Kennedy, love. But it was also to be a tough love. Goodwin made it clear that if the citizenry didn't want to find meaning through state action or measure the quality of their lives on a bureaucratic slide rule, such reluctance would be overcome. But not necessarily via persuasion. Rather, it was the government's task to spur them into action or the support of action. Here again, Dewey's ghost was hard at work. Goodwin declared that the Great Society must ensure our people the environment, the capacities, and the social structures which will give them a meaningful chance to pursue their individual happiness. This differed very little from Dewey's version of state-directed democracy. Dewey held that natural rights and natural liberties exist only in the kingdom of mythological social zoology, and that organized social control via a socialized economy was the only means to create free individuals. The religious character of modern liberalism was never far from the surface. Indeed, the 1960s should be seen as another in a series of great awakenings in American history, a widespread yearning for new meaning that gave rise to a tumultuous social and political movement. The only difference was that this awakening largely left God behind. Paul Goodman, whose 1960 Growing Up Absurd helped launch the politics of hope in the first part of the decade, came to recognize in the second half how insufficient his original diagnosis had been. I imagined that the worldwide student protest had to do with changing political and moral institutions to which I was sympathetic. But I now saw, in 1969, that we had to do with a religious crisis of the magnitude of the Reformation in the 1500s, when not only all institutions, but all learning had been corrupted by the whore of Babylon.